The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show and happy Friday. Yay. Last night, you may be aware, was President Biden's State of the Union address. I'm just going to tell you what I thought. It was a disgrace. It was shameless in its dishonesty and partisanship. What it telegraphed to me was that he doesn't care about this country. He cares about himself and his reelection. First, a quick word on his manner. Insofar as he did not fall down or refer to any dead people as alive, it was a win. He didn't keel over. He maintained his energy. He didn't get lost or sniff any young girl's hair. So thumbs up. They had to be relieved on Team White House last night. For Democrats scared he might die any day, he probably reassured them. But let's face it. The slurring, the stumbles, there were so many stumbled every other line. The jumbling of words over and over in a speech that was loaded into the teleprompter. Hello, we all saw it. Not horrible is not really the review you're going for as leader of the free world. Can't we do a little better? Of course, the press is celebrating this address like it was Winston Churchill himself up there last night. But the honest truth is that, okay, unusual energy for Joe Biden, with all the usual dishonesty and nastiness. That's what I saw. He began by comparing this moment in time to 1941 and the rise of Adolf Hitler. Okay. He said the freedom and democracy under attack back then was kind of like what we're seeing today, and then quickly pivoted to January 6th. Sure. Okay. Insurrectionists with a dagger at the throat of American democracy, posing the gravest threat to our democracy since the Civil War. All I could think was like, QAnon shaman was dressed like a Viking, but war? Akin to Hitler? I don't know. Might be pushing it a little far. He hit on abortion. Right call. Dems love it. Can't get enough of it, in fact. He hit on that wacky IVF situation down in Alabama as if that's indicative of the GOP dedicating itself as a party to ending IVF for all Americans. Hello, Donald Trump was one of the first to speak out against what happened with that IVF clinic down in Georgia. Biden tried to lie about how the economy is now crushing it. Okay. Back on that abortion question, he actually had the nerve to warn the Supreme Court justices who had shown up there, sitting there. They came in a showing of respect to him and to the country. But he chose to get in their faces, suggesting they are about to realize just how much political power women have in this country.
Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away? Look, it's a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court majority wrote the following, and with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you get right about that.
Clearly. That's what the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade was counting on, sir. Saying the High Court did not want to be the arbiter of the abortion matter and that it should be up to the voters to decide what they want in their respective states. Biden can't even threaten correctly. He wanted to scare them that the exact thing they said should totally happen is about to happen? Okay. It's ridiculous. The exchange on our southern border was the most dishonest part of the evening, and that's saying something. He got up there pretending to be Ann Coulter. He really, really wants tough legislation right now so he can do something about the border, except he's not going to use mean words about illegal immigrants, okay? He's going to do something about the border, but not use the mean words. That, he says, is a bridge too far. He will not say that they're poisoning the blood of our country, no matter how many of them kill our children with fentanyl-laced Adderall, because it's mean. He's humane. Marjorie Taylor Greene interrupted this part, demanding that President Biden say the name of Laken Riley, the 22-year-old University of Georgia nursing student who was murdered by an illegal weeks ago. I wish that MTG had just kept quiet, because he was right in the middle of a brain freeze that I wanted to see play out, and her heckling saved him, which was annoying, but watch this.
It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner. Not really. Laken Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand. But look, if we change the dynamic at the border, people pay these smugglers $8,000 to get across the border, because they know if they get by, if they get by and let into the country, it's 6 to 8 years before they have a hearing. And it's worth taking the chance of the $8,000. But if it's only 6 weeks, the idea is it's highly unlikely that people will pay that money and come all that way, knowing that they'll be able to be kicked out quickly.
Oh, my Lord. There's so much to say there. First of all, Laken was a University of Augusta student. She was running on the campus of the University of Georgia. But look at him pretending. Look at him up there pretending. Like, gee, these mean Republicans left me with this really tough situation, but I'm going to do something about changing it from months to weeks before they get their asylum hearings. Hello, this is all your fault. This, for me personally, was the part of the speech where I was actually starting to nod off, because, of course, it was boring, like they all are. And then I heard MTG call out, and then I heard him actually accept the challenge, and he did say her name. Except not really, because he couldn't, as you heard there. Notwithstanding the fact that that name, Laken Riley, is all over the news, all over buttons being worn in the chamber last night, including the one in his own hand that MTG had given him when he walked in, and the fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene had just said it to him out loud. He still botched the name Laken Riley. He can get George Floyd out, no problem, a drug-addled criminal who menaced women, but Laken Riley, who was helping the sick heal, killed at the hands of an illegal immigrant, couldn't quite muster the interest or the execution on her name. I'm sorry. The part where he went on to lie about it all being the fault of the Republicans who didn't like the deal that was just proposed, that we don't have a border, is just absurd. And everyone knows it. He reversed all of Trump's policies on day one. Just as he had promised to do, he wanted to be more humane. He wants now to blame the fact that we've had upwards of 10 million illegals come into this country on his watch, and no one knows where they are or what they're up to on the GOP. Okay. By the way, the president used that term, illegal, after MTG said it. And now these absurd leftists today in the media are everywhere expressing their outrage at that. Not about Laken Riley's death, her murder, but that he used the term illegal about the man who murdered her. Well, he was one. Illegal. He was an illegal, illegal, illegal. Deal with it. Deal with the fact that he was here illegally on Joe Biden's watch. That's what's relevant. He was an illegal. Sick of it. You would not believe we're going to get into it. He also, true to form, took the opportunity to make the moment, that moment, about Laken Riley's murder, once again about himself. I've lost children too, he pointed out to her grieving family. So I know, he tried to say, as if anything Joe Biden has been through equates to what this poor family of a murdered daughter is suffering right now. Just stop. Stop doing that. That's not humane, sir. He ended the speech with more lies about how committed he is to honesty, decency, dignity, and equality. Honesty? Like about your son's business dealings and yours and his laptop being Russian disinformation, his connections to Ukraine and the Chinese. Remember that little debate in which you made us all sorts of representations and promises that weren't true? Decency? Like when you checked your watch as the bodies of the fallen soldiers came home from Afghanistan after your disastrous withdrawal? That was decent of you. God, when is this going to be over? Need to get out of here. Dignity? Like when you let those trans lunatics show their fake breasts on the White House lawn as they defiled the people's house? He lamented some other unnamed person's story of resentment, revenge, and retribution. That's not me, he assured us. That's not me. Okay. Despite 4 criminal prosecutions, 2 federal by his DOJ against his Republican rival. Not to mention tax probes into critics like Matt Taibbi and Clay Travis, criminal probes into folks like James O'Keefe, who dared look into the Ashley Biden diary situation. No retribution there whatsoever. So yeah, the president, yeah, he did seem like he'd been given a hefty dose of steroids last night. He lived, he didn't keel over, but we all suffered and will continue to if the American people don't see through this charade.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Joining me now to discuss it all is Sarah Gonzalez, host of Blaze TV's Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered, and Josh Hammer, host of the America on Trial podcast. Sarah, Josh, welcome back. Great to have you. What did you make of it, Josh? It's hard to get worked up about these State of the Unions because they're always manipulations and they're usually kind of boring. But I mean, the dishonesty was just next level last night.
Yeah, Megan, really strong stuff from you in that monologue right there. So look, I mean, my take on this is I approach this, who is the audience for an address like this? Who is the audience for this clearly mentally senile, clearly physically debilitating octogenarian to get up there and try to make it through this hour and a half teleprompter speech without keeling over? And to me, the audience is obviously not center-right America. For that matter, the audience for a dripping partisan, nakedly politicized speech of this nature that makes no pretense whatsoever of trying to unify, of trying to bring the country together, the obvious audience for this is Democratic and left-wing activists who are still trying to shiv Biden from the top of the ticket. I think that this is a speech really delivered, Megan, to places like Dearborn, Michigan, who are voting uncommitted in the Michigan primary. It's a speech for places like the Minneapolis area that voted 19% statewide in Minnesota for uncommitted. I think he's basically giving this speech very much not to unify the country. He's giving it kind of subtly to the people who are hoping that he will be brushed aside at the last minute for a Kamala Harris, a Gavin Newsom, Jared Polis, or, you know, God help us, some other left-wing nutjob. And I think that he's really trying to at this point, get up there with the B12, whatever kind of boosters and drug cocktail, you know, the White House doctor may or may not have signed off on. He's getting up there and saying, I am the nominee. Deal with it. You're not going to get rid of me.
I think that's actually very good news for the Republicans, Sarah. What do you think? Because I feel like Republicans would love to see this guy be the standard bearer and the opponent. They don't want Michelle Obama swooping in. And if that's what this has done, shorn up his base into believing he's the guy, they should stick with him and he's going to see it through to the end. Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Megan, especially after that performance last night, which, again, great monologue. You couldn't have, no one could have said it better. But, you know, I will point out the bar, people kept saying in the mainstream media, oh, well, I mean, he did a great job. He surpassed expectations. Right. But the expectation was, is he going to even survive? So the fact that he surpassed your expectations is not really saying much, in my opinion. It really stuck out to me that his first topic that he went to in the State of the Union address was addressing Ukraine. And really, doesn't that tell you all you need to know about this president? You mentioned, Megan, that he considers himself to be humane. He always wants to point out, oh, well, that's the humane thing to do. It's not humane to say illegal. And he got in trouble for that. And I would just like to point out, it seems to be that all of his humanity goes to everyone except Americans, right? The humanity that he has, I'm so humane to talk about Ukraine and talk about how we need to be propping them up. Our taxpayer dollars need to go to Ukraine. Our taxpayer dollars need to fund all of these illegals coming into the country. We need to bring all of these illegals in. It seems to be, Megan, that all of this humanity that I'm seeing from Joe Biden is towards every single other entity other than the American citizen. And it was just disgusting to watch him lie. Although, what else was he supposed to do? Because he has nothing to run on. He has no victories to tout. So, of course, he's going to lie, but it didn't make it any more settling to listen to and stomach, especially when we sit around, we're watching what's going on in America play out, and we know that it's just absolutely false.
Mm-hmm. You know, today, Josh, I mean, truly, it is like Churchill got up there, the way the media is talking about him. Scarborough. Mm. When I watch Scarborough right now, it's a reminder to me that some people are just desperate to be around power. You know, he licked Donald Trump's boots when he thought Trump might be getting close to the White House. He couldn't have bent over and kissed and licked any harder. Okay, sorry for the graphic image, but he couldn't have. And then when he realized he wasn't going to be vice president, he got mad. He turned on him. And then we all saw how his coverage changed. And now that he's getting called by Joe Biden, we read this in the press, and reportedly Biden and his acolytes watch Morning Joe. He's once again swooning that he might have access to power. That's what I see in this man. Some of us, especially those of us who are actual journalists, we get more skeptical of you as you get more power. Right? It's our job to hold you to account. The higher you get, the less kind we are to be, you know, the less likely we are to be kind to you. And he's the opposite. Anyway, take a look at this little mashup of him, among others, on the president.
I was not expecting what he did. He came out punching, forceful, strong voice. He threw boiling oil on MAGA, on Trump, on the Republicans without ever mentioning a name.
He had Frazier's left hook. This was a tour de force by Joe Biden. And in the words of Naomi Biden, doubt him, then watch him.
I thought the speech was very high caffeine. I think Joe Biden woke up this morning, had a cup of coffee and had his Wheaties. He was definitely there to fight.
This was his how about them apple speech.
So what do we watch the same thing, Josh? I don't know. Is that just them running cover? Or you know what I think it is? They're just relieved. They're relieved he didn't die.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you said it, Sarah said it. I mean, they are genuinely relieved that he did not keel over and have to be rushed to the ICU in the middle of that speech there. You know, someone, maybe it was Scarborough who said he had his morning coffee and his Wheaties that day. I mean, I think it's more likely that they kind of gave him a little bit of Hunter Biden's cocaine from the White House, to be honest with you, if I had to guess there. I mean, because we haven't seen that kind of energy, whether real or drugged up, whatever, from this president in God knows how long, probably since he was campaigning for the White House the last time back in 2020. Look, I mean, there's no way to describe what we just saw there in that montage other than just Soviet-style Pravda propaganda. That's all this is. I mean, this is regime media covering for the regime. They are terrified of the Orange Man bad. They are going to pull out every single stunt in the book, Megan, over the next 7-8 months until this election November, including going to the mattresses for Joe Biden when he manages to not die in front of a nationally televised audience. They're going to the mattresses with Jack Smith and all the lawfare. We have seen nothing yet. They are just getting started. Wait till the ads start blaring into the suburbs all across America about how January 6th was a Nazi-esque attempt at a coup. They're just going to go bonkers here. I really fear that this is kind of just a preview of what is to come over the next few months. It's going to be genuinely harrowing, I fear.
I mean, to even use the word Hitler, you know, to make a reference to 1941 in the first minute or two of getting up there, how absurd. You're just, even if you want to zoom out and make it about much more than Donald Trump, that's just an absurd analogy to what is happening in the world today. It's generally not done. You know, most of us in media know You don't go to the Hitler comparisons, no matter how bad things are. It's just, you don't touch it. You know, 6 million dead Jews in incinerators is not something to casually bring up at the top of the State of the Union so you can be reelected. Most of us know this, but he has no respect. And my only concern in this, Sarah, is that, you know, people, like, I think about my husband's mom. She's a wonderful, very smart woman who lives in outside of Philadelphia, which is a purple state, you know, more blue these days, but, you know, pretty reasonable in its politics historically. And I worry that people who live in that area where she lives are watching this like, okay, you know, like, he did it. He was together. And, you know, Trump is crazy. And he seemed all right without, you know, they don't know necessarily that every other line was a lie and a manipulation by somebody who managed to crack a couple of jokes here and there. And thanks to some sort of shot of steroids or something, got through this with more energy than normal.
Yeah, I mean, look, you may be right, but I do at least have hope that those people that you're talking about, you know, the average American who doesn't live in this world, who doesn't have time, quite honestly, to eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff like we do. My hope is that they, look, if it'd be different if this was a campaign speech, but this is the State of the Union after 3 years of Joe Biden's presidency. And they have to at least look around them and say, is my life better under Joe Biden? How much am I paying at the grocery store? How much more am I paying when I go to the gas pump? Why does everything cost more? He keeps talking about shrinkflation and we're supposed to care that the cookie monster is upset that he gets less cookies in his, you know, Oreos. And it's like, I really have to believe that the everyday average American sees right through him blaming it on everyone else. It's always the mean corporations. It couldn't possibly be Joe Biden's, you know, disastrous economic policies. And so I have to believe that because we're living it, they're living it, and they have to know that this is a lie.
Yeah, you're right. Because when you, it's almost like we were talking about this recently, but like when you see a liar in front of you, and their affect doesn't really match what they're saying, your gut feels it. Like there's a dishonesty happening here. You feel it on a gut level. Mm-hmm. And I do think with things like inflation and immigration, people are going to feel it on a gut level. They know it's bad. They know it's bad no matter what he says. But the Pravda style propaganda that you referenced, Josh, I'll give you another example. In Scarborough, this is him. Just listen to this nonsense. I'm sorry, but it has to be called out. This is before the State of the Union. Okay, this is yesterday, him getting us ready. This is what a propagandist does. Take a listen.
He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been. Oh. Intellectually, analytically, because he's been around for 50 years. And, you know, I don't know if people know this or not. Biden used to be a hothead. Start your tape right now, because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This
we dropped that
version
in.
Of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
Oh, my God. I mean, he might as well have just ended it with, because he's listening to me, because I've gotten in his head. So I'm telling you, this is the best ever, Josh.
You know, Megan, for the younger listeners here, I feel like I have to remind the younger listeners here, Joe Scarborough was a Republican congressman from a very, right. very red district in the Florida panhandle.
Thank you.
He was NRA endorsed. You know, if they had a House Freedom Caucus back then, Joe Scarborough probably would have been a founding member. He had a very conservative voting record over his 3 to 4 terms in Congress. And he has just obviously lost his everlasting mind. And he's not the only example. There's so many examples that I could point to. I'll give you just one other, Megan. A former federal judge by the name of Judge J. Michael Luttig. He was a federal judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. He was the conservative rock star. All the top tier law students clerked for him. Ted Cruz, John Eastman, Noel Francisco. He was sending 3-4 clerks a year to the Supreme Court. He was a short lister for the seat that ultimately went to John Roberts during the Bush administration. Then he retired from the bench. He served at Boeing as general counsel for 13 years, reemerges a few years ago during COVID as a public commentator. And he's been just a viciously, viciously anti-Trump, quote unquote, legal eagle. And in particular, Megan, he has been probably the leading number one national proponent of the argument that Donald Trump is disqualified from the ballot because of the 14th Amendment Section 3 so-called insurrection clause. In fact, after the Colorado Supreme Court in December held 4-3 that Trump was disqualified, Ludwig did the rounds on CNN and MSNBC and said that this logic was masterful, brilliant, and unassailable. Yeah, so unassailable that even Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson did not sign up for it. So these people who once had their conservative bona fides lined up, again, orange man, they just lose it.
I love that you sent out a tweet about that the other day, and it said something like, now Ludwig is to the left of Ketanji Brown Jackson. Great job. Your Trump derangement syndrome is serving you really well. So speaking of like suburban women who everybody's fighting over, Sarah, you know, they're a coveted voting group because they used to be Republican voters and then they didn't really love Trump and moved over to the Dems. I don't know how much they're going to love the shouting. I really don't. It was a lot. I know he was trying to show vigor, but like I see vigor when I look at that Canadian politician, Pierre, whose last name I can never say, Kelly Maguire, Polyev. Okay, thank you, team. Who's just casually eating the apple and like demolishing the nasty reporter who was trying. Like that's vigor. That's youth. That's strength. He doesn't have to shout at me for me to feel like this is a strong man. Last night, we got something else in our current president. And here's some examples of that. I think it's six.
A great, gravest threat to U.S. democracy since the Civil War. But they failed. You can't love your country only when you win. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. Where is it written we can't be the manufacturing capital of the world? We are, we will. We're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Right here in America, where they belong.
We could have kept going. It's just a few. So what did you make of his affect?
Yeah, well, I mean, Megan, I agree with you. I don't think that the tone is going to sit well with suburban moms. And I mean, I think that Joe Biden, his problem is his brain is not really connecting with the words that he's reading on a screen. They're simply words on a screen to him. And he's only reacting to whatever drug cocktail that has been injected into him so that all he knows to do is get loud, not necessarily read it with any sort of, you know, emotion that's appropriate for what he's saying. I don't think that it's going to sit well with suburban moms, especially when you consider that the number one priority, or at least at the very top of the list, is going to be their children and their families' safety. And all the way around, across the board, Joe Biden has been the one to threaten that, not just with his disastrous open border policy, where he has, you know, you've got the Laken Rileys of the country who are dying. You've got the people being poisoned by the fentanyl that's overflowing in through our southern borders. But it's also despite what Joe Biden said last night, I'm sure you guys will be shocked to hear he was completely lying and misrepresenting that violent crime has gone down. So we're looking all around us. We're seeing that there is violent crime in cities. We're seeing how they're treating actual criminals. They're releasing them back into all of these cities to reoffend. And so I think suburban moms are sitting around going, okay, this guy's yelling at me. He's making us less safe overall. Maybe the mean tweets sound pretty good right about now.
Mm. I'm so glad that all the crime is gone because they can get rid of the National Guard on the New York City subway now. It's like terrific. That's wonderful news. So they should let them know right away. We've got to talk about the word policing by his, as soon as he said, Marjorie Taylor Greene said illegal, and then he repeated illegal. She got killed by an illegal, which is what we all say because it's a perfectly acceptable short form for someone who breaks our laws, comes into our country unlawfully, and then murders one of our most promising young citizens. I have zero problem using that term. And the president feels the same. I'm sure behind closed doors, he does say that. So he said it in the State of the Union after MTG said it. And cue the freak out on the left. Some of the ones that are on camera, we queued up. Take a listen. 8.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but it's not a big thing, okay?
Biden stops his speech and has almost like a presidential version of a screw it moment. A young woman killed by an illegal, which is not a phrase that Democrats usually use to talk about undocumented immigrants.
CNN columnist Jill Filipovic, killed by an illegal. Ugh, Joe, why? Representative Garcia of Illinois, as a proud immigrant, I'm extremely disappointed to hear him use that word. Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas, it's dangerous rhetoric. The president's getting bad advice from his advisors and speechwriters. Ilhan Omar, let me be clear, no human being is illegal. Representative Delia Ramirez, Dem Illinois, no human being is illegal. Cori Bush, no human being is illegal. Okay. Again, this guy appears to have murdered this 22-year-old Lakin Riley for the fun of it. Literally, it looks like he killed her just for the fun of murdering a young American girl out on a run in between helping people live and heal in her nursing training. How, what's the matter with these people? Honestly, Josh, like, what is the matter with them?
Megan, I think what's happening with the Democratic Party is, if you look at the history of the Democratic Party, you know, going back in the early to middle part of the 20th century, you had presidents like Woodrow Wilson, FDR, Truman, LBJ. I wasn't alive, obviously, but I didn't necessarily agree with their economic policies, but they were a mostly political economy, blue collar, middle class economics based political party. And that really continued up through the 1990s, back when Bill Clinton was president. You know, it wasn't that long ago, speaking of the immigration issue, Harry Reid, the former Nevada Senate Majority Leader, he was opposed to birthright citizenship. I mean, the Democratic Party back then, when they were strongly backed by the labor unions, back when Democrats understood that you could not have an open border and decent wages for the working and middle class, they were really strict when it came to illegal immigration. Bill Clinton signed a very harsh anti-illegal immigration statute in 1996. It was supported by Biden, Harry Reid, all those folks. Then the Democratic Party coalition really changes in 2008. It really is kind of the emergence of the modern Barack Obama coalition, where they really ditch kind of all of this old school blue collar, middle class economic stuff. Trump would later tap into that sentiment in the 2016 campaign when he, you know, was an earthquake in the Republican primary that year. But then you have the emergence of this new Democratic Party that really is not focused, on securing the border, on good, decent wages for the working class. At this point, post 2008, the Democratic Party has been focused on appeasing and appealing to their coalition of aggrieved interests. That's usually how I phrase it. Or their coalition of interests that the party apparatus tell you that you should be aggrieved because America is systemically racist or is systemically homophobic or transphobic or xenophobic or, you know, insert your phobia word salad of the day. The key takeaway here, Megan, though, I think that when you look at the polling crosstabs right now, this 2008-2012 era Obama Democratic Party coalition is falling apart before our eyes. Black voters, Hispanic voters are peeling away. The 18 to 35 Gen Z millennial demographic is peeling away. Democrats are in deep doo-doo. And what you saw right there with Joe Biden with the illegal, that's a Freudian slip. And it's kind of a flashback to the Democratic Party that used to be back when they were more focused on boosting wages for the blue collar middle class there. But he's been eclipsed both physically, as the case may be with his very advanced age, and intellectually by this new crop of radicals.
It's a good point. I mean, he's of that era anyway. I mean, he came up, of course, he was Barack Obama's vice president. They are obsessed with identity. We know this, using the proper terminology about everybody, Sarah. And last night, we've got to show this moment. He took a moment to point out he has got the first female vice president. And take a look at how Kamala Harris reacted to this moment.
I got elected to the United States Senate when I had no intention of running at age 29. Then vice president, our first black president. Now president to the first women vice president.
For the listening audience, she stood and she clapped for herself. I am going to miss her when she's gone. What do you make of it?
Are you going to miss her? Because I'm counting down the days until she's gone. She is such an embarrassment to all of us, right? I mean, the history books will look back and reflect just how dumb we were for, not us, but the left, for engaging in this identity politics, which, by the way, what is a woman? They still can't tell us. We have Ketanji Brown Jackson, you know, interviewing for the Supreme Court, who can't even tell us what a woman is. So it's nice to know that the left now remembers what is a woman and what is not, and can designate Kamala Harris one. I mean, she's just such an embarrassment. Look, I don't.
But listen, maybe it's that you haven't heard her latest inspo, her latest inspirational speech, Sarah. I'm going to play you just an excerpt of Kamala Harris on democracy, and then you're going to start to feel it, and you too will think, please don't get rid of her. Watch.
Because when we think about the strength of our democracy, you know, I think that there's a duality to the nature of democracy. When it's intact, it's so strong in terms of what it does to uphold and protect individual rights and freedoms. So strong in its nature. And it is very fragile. It will only be as strong as our willingness to fight for it.
so strong and also so fragile. I think it was Joseph Massey, who's my favorite poet on X, tweeted out, forgive me if it wasn't you, tweeted out, is she okay? That was the right reaction.
Yeah, I also, like, is that what she said to Willie Brown as she was rising through the ranks? I mean, look, she is such an embarrassment to you. I would point out both of your profession, or Megan, your former profession. The fact that this woman made it through law school, passed the bar, had this prestigious career in the state of California, and she can't even put together a sentence, is just such a mockery of the entire profession.
So true. But let's not forget about Fannie Willis. I mean, that's another, like, and everybody in her office, from the way it looked at that hearing, my God, all those people passed the bar. It's amazing. All right. So there's so much more to get through. Let me squeeze in a quick break, and then we come back. We have got to discuss Katie Britt, and it's not going to be pleasant for Katie. All right. I'm just going to tell you there right up front. Stand by.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
The Republicans had an opportunity here to put their best foot forward and just sound normal. That's it. Don't shout, say normal things, and speak to regular Americans about what's real. And they blew it, as they do almost all the time in these State of the Union responses. They put up rising star in the Republican Party, Katie Britt, who is a senator from the state of Alabama and a Republican, as I said, and I don't know what the F I saw. I agree with the people saying she looked like she was auditioning for a show on Lifetime. The drama, the fake affectation, the over-the-top portrayal of emotions I did not believe she was feeling at all. Her inauthenticity, it was totally cringe, as the kids would say. Sorry, this is how I saw it. You tell me whether you disagree. Here are some high/lowlights.
I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime. It's truly breathtaking. But right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare. Our country can do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it. President Biden inherited the most secure border of all time. He invited it with 94 executive actions in his first 100 days.
She embarrassed herself, she embarrassed the Republicans, and she embarrassed women. It was a disgrace. I was horrified by her performance, and I really think that it's going to take her years to rebound from that performance. Am I being too hard on her, Sarah?
No, I completely agree with you. And as you rightfully pointed out, it is the most Republican thing to do ever, to be handed this on a silver platter. You have a guy who's at a low bar is just don't die. He hits that, right? Okay, so good for him. But it was just such a terrible, terrible night. And there were so many lies that were spewed. And you have this opportunity on a silver platter. And what do you do with it? You parade Katie Britt out there to audition for a Lifetime movie. I mean, it was just so painfully embarrassing. I literally had secondhand embarrassment watching her try to over-dramatize everything. I mean, you had one job, Republican Party. You had one job. Bring someone out there and just be normal. And they could not even do that. Uniparty stuff that, like, do any of these people understand real life? Are any of these real people? It feels like none of them are.
Didn't anybody, like, it reminds me, my family has been watching Modern Family, you know, the reruns of Modern Family, which is such a great show. And at one point, Claire Dunphy, played by Julie Bowen, decides to run for, like, town council, and her family just eviscerates her as she's practicing her debate skills. They point out everything that's wrong with her that she's doing wrong. And someone needed to do a little bit of that to Katie Britt. There needed to be some down-home honesty about it's not working. You're not Meryl Streep. This is one of my favorite parts. I mean, the fake holding back tears. If she actually were brought to tears by something that had happened, maybe. But it was fake. It was obviously fake. But my favorite part is, like, the look down, the pause, and the look down, and then back up. Like, oh my God. Like, I think her script said dramatic pause, Josh. Total, total missed opportunity.
Yeah, you know, Megan, there was a prominent Israeli statesman and political theorist many decades ago, 50, 60 years ago, by the name of Abba Eben. And he famously said of the Palestinian Arabs that they never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And for the entirety of my adult lifetime, since I've been covering, following, talking, and writing about politics, the Republican Party never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Because as you and Sarah have both said, the floor here was literally do better than the guy that we were worried about getting rushed to the ICU with, like, heart palpitations or something like that. And we had this. I mean, Katie Britt there, I mean, just in that montage that we just saw, to say nothing of some of the other antics that the whole country, unfortunately, was watching last night. I mean, she kind of comes across as an insecure high school junior who's trying to swoon before the star quarterback and try to convince him, like, yes, no, I actually really care about your touchdown passes or something like that. The whole thing is beyond over the top. I mean, I was never a huge fan of Katie Britt in the first place, to be honest with you. I think that she's not a particularly in touch with the current mood of the Republican Party. She kind of comes from this kind of old school business chamber of commerce-y wing. She definitely did herself no favors here whatsoever. But here's the one tiny thing that I will say. I'm not defending her. It was a very bad performance. But when is the last time that there's actually been a good State of the Union response? Sarah and I were talking about this before the show went live today. I think you had to go back probably to Mitch Daniels. Mitch Daniels around 2012 was... Yeah, that was the last time that I could actually think of, like, wow, that was actually a capable response. You had Bobby Jindal back in the day, Marco Rubio with the water bottle. No one does a good job of this. And no, it is a structural disadvantage. Yeah.
Why do they keep choosing people who can't speak in public? It's so upsetting to me. You can get a normal spokesperson. And I would submit that there is a chance they are a little too focused over on the Republican side on identity politics, as opposed to getting something who's a whippersnapper, who's super articulate, who can go bring it. You should get somebody who can speak live, who can actually respond to some of the lies we've just heard. Hell, I'm a registered independent. I'm not even a Republican. I could do it. I could do it way better than these people. Get somebody who can speak. I don't want to do it. But Ann Coulter has a, I love her Substack. And she pointed out, the following. In the last 9 responses to a State of the Union address, Republicans have chosen a woman or a minority. This year, it was tearful Senator Katie Britt, literally sitting at a kitchen table, presumably because a nursery school was not available. The last white male to give the response was Mitch Daniels. Coincidentally, it was the last decent one. You sure know your voters, GOP. This would be like Democrats refusing to give any jobs to women or minorities, as opposed to what they actually do, which is to give all jobs to women and minorities. In caps, we are not the party of identity politics, you utter imbeciles. The GOP cannot learn. They keep hauling out someone who checks a demographic box the Republicans are having trouble with, who proceeds to soak the speech in personal biography instead of substance. And here she finishes it up. For added cringe, Senator Katie Britt decided to drench her speech in estrogen. Children, kitchen table, more children, worried moms. We support IVF because family-familiness, need to get dinner on the kitchen table. All this delivered in an overwrought manner that will be used to teach students in the first week of acting class what overacting is. And once you become Senator Katie, you should have become Kate. We don't have Senators Billy, Timmy, and Mikey. She goes on from there. I agree with every word of that.
Yeah, I do as well. I mean, look, I would also say, I'm going to take it one step further, and this may be controversial to say, I don't know, but I am, as the Hispanic here, I will just say it. They also had a Spanish response, and I don't think that there should be a separate Spanish response. It's very identity politics. It's very pandery, right? Like, have one response, and if you want to translate it, translate it. If you want to have a Spanish transcript, put a Spanish transcript. But literally, all we are trying to do is respond to all of the lies that Joe Biden has just stood up there and said. And if you can't find someone who can effectively do that, who is a woman or a Black person or check box here, just find someone, right? And the sad part about this, Megan and Josh, is I feel like the substance of what she was saying probably was good if we would have read it on paper. It may have been a good speech. It may have included things that could have really resonated. I don't either. I have no idea because I was so focused on how embarrassing it is that I have no idea whether or not it was actually something that could have resonated.
No, I've got nothing, Josh. And here's what's tragic in her case. Heretofore, as far as I know, in her delivery, has been normal. She's not always like, it's not like Kamala Harris, where I played that soundbite and no one here was shocked. It was like, oh yeah, there she goes again. Listen, we just pulled a random soundbite of Katie Britt. This is how she normally sounds. Listen.
It is clear that we have a next generation of leaders that are standing up and getting engaged. I mean, everything from school boards we've seen ever since the COVID lockdowns and parents, you know, being very frustrated with their children being masked consistently and also looking at what they've been taught in the classroom and wanting to really be a part of saying, no, we want parents' rights back, to me running for the U.S. Senate. You see this next generation stepping up across the country.
Who told her she was Meryl Streep? Truly, like, who told her what you really need to do is dial up the drama? You know, like, CAA may be watching. You really want to wow the Ari Emanuels of the world. You never know what your next act could be, Katie.
I mean, the saddest part of all of this, Megan, is, I mean, America has real problems. I mean, we talked about Lake and Riley for a while earlier on this show. I mean, what's happening at the border is not just a national disgrace. It is a global catastrophe. It is a true, earnest global catastrophe. Look, I mean, 110,000 Americans dropped dead of drug overdose for the last year for which we have statistics, which is 2022. My cousin, may his memory be a blessing, overdosed and died from fentanyl 6 years ago. We were very close. This is all coming across that southern border. Immigration is the one issue that Republicans have to run on day in and day out for the rest of this campaign. And the way to make that case is to give it in a statesmanlike, dignified, straightforward, no BS fashion, ideally not at a kitchen table, by the way, ideally with something like a little more stately as a backdrop. I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but just be like a normal politician. They're trying to overthink this. I have no idea who literally was telling her to act like that. Maybe it was her husband. I genuinely have no clue. Clearly was the wrong affectation for the wrong time with the wrong message.
They should have gotten, like, I realize the family of Lake and Riley is grieving, but they should have gotten the family of somebody who's been really hurt by these illegal immigration policies and just get up and tell your story. That's it. That would have been far more powerful than the nonsense we saw from the kitchen table. couple of just samples. Someone who goes by The Chat. Katie Britt was giving Lifetime TV serial killer mom vibes. Charlie Kirk. Katie Britt is talking like she's hosting a cooking show, whispering about how Democrats don't get it. Allie Beth Stuckey. Okay, GOP, never again. I know y'all were going for the relatable mom speaking in her kitchen from her heart, but it did not work. Just a straight, strong speech will do in the future. Thanks. I get it. And I agree. So they should do what I just said. TV is all about moments. People remember moments. Get a powerful person who's been through something and just zero in on that one issue, like Josh said, illegal immigration in this case, and say, like in Lakin's case, this illegal came into the country in 2022 on Joe Biden's watch. He'd already been in trouble with the law, hadn't been deported. Why not? That would have been far more effective. Josh and Sarah, stay with us. There is an update in the Fannie Willis case. Don't go away.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Okay, guys, so some developments in the Trump legal warfare. He has managed to post a bond in order to appeal that $93 million judgment E. Jean Carroll got against him. So that's good. So that appeal will proceed because not that easy to secure $93 million, but he got it. So thumbs up. Secondly, Letitia James, who got the $450 million judgment against him and keeps tweeting out the running total of what he owes with interest. She's loving her moment in the spotlight, has learned the hard way that the working class, especially in New York, do not approve of her or what she's doing. Take a look at what happened to her when she addressed the FDNY. This is via Fox News. Watch.
Come on, we're in a house of God. First, simmer down. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
Wow. Sarah, look at that. FDNY, thumbs down. I'm sure they didn't respond nicely to being told to simmer down, which is annoying. They don't like her and they don't like what she's doing. They get it.
Yeah, I think that we're seeing many Americans, just like FDNY right there, just kind of galvanize around Donald Trump because they see what is so clear that this is the, as much as the left likes to talk about, you know, democracy is at stake and this is everything is a threat to democracy and we love democracy. They are very clearly engaging in, you know, disturbing a political election, election interference. As much as they talk about, we don't like election interference, that's what they're doing by the persecution of Donald Trump. And I, even the independents, and I would say the moderate Democrats that still exist, they see this for what it is. They see right through it. They know that Donald Trump is not guilty of all of these things. They know that E. Jean Carroll is a psychopath. They know all these things. They can see it. And I think that every American should be sitting there wondering to themselves, again, Donald Trump has said it. If they can do it to him, they will do it to you. Ask the J6ers who are still rotting in federal prison for parading around and being led on a guided tour by Capitol Police. I mean, we are seeing serious ramifications of the weaponization of the judicial system against half of America, seemingly. And I just think that there are so many more Americans that are awake because the left overplayed their hand on this, as they do so often, as Megan and Josh, I know you guys know, they overplayed their hand on this. They took it too far, and America sees what they're doing.
There's no question that people get that Trump has been kicked around more so than any other, even strong Republican politician. That, I mean, what they're doing to him, you have a whole podcast about it, Josh, to him is extraordinary. And that's what made it particularly interesting to me, that this clip that was going around X the other day that I retweeted to, it's from the History in Memes X account. And it's a 34-year-old Donald Trump. Just a real estate mogul at the time. And he's asked by a reporter, it's classic stuff, is like the old school television, and the way this woman asked the questions are interesting. Anyway, it's a longer clip, but take a look at 34-year-old Donald Trump being asked about why he wasn't going to run for president.
For some people, the ultimate goal in life has been becoming the president of the United States. Would you like to be the president of the United States?
I really don't believe I would run, but I would like to see somebody as the president who could do the job. And there are very capable people in this country.
Most people who are capable are not running for office. Most men are frightened of politics today.
It is a shame, isn't it?
Yes.
It is a shame. The most capable people are not necessarily running for political office. And that is a very sad commentary on the country. They had major corporations and they had this and that, but they are not running for political office.
Why wouldn't someone like yourself run for political office? You have all the money that you possibly need. You've accomplished a great deal, even though you are only 34. I know there's a lot of things that you possibly can do in the years ahead. Why wouldn't you dedicate yourself to public service?
Because I think it's a very mean life. I would love, and I would dedicate my life to this country, but I see it as being a mean life. And I also see it as somebody with strong views, and somebody with the kind of views that are maybe a little bit unpopular, which may be right, but maybe unpopular, wouldn't necessarily have a chance of getting elected against somebody with no great brain, but a big smile. And that's a sad commentary for the political process.
There is something so riveting about that clip. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's him. He looks just like Eric Trump there. He's only 34. It was 1981 on the Rona Barrett show. And, boy, if he only knew how right he was, Josh.
You know, it's funny. So I don't know if you guys remember the old Comedy Central roasts, but my wife and I recently rewatched all of them because there's some really good material in there. And Donald Trump was roasted on the Comedy Central roast in 2011. And he actually ends the night. So they roast him, and at the very end, he kind of gets back at the roasters. And he kind of signs off the stage by saying, "You're going to love me when I'm president of the United States." So he kind of called it as recently as 2011. I'm not entirely sure what changed. I mean, I guess he ran for president briefly back in the 1990s, or he explored it back on the old Reform Party, the old Ross Perot ticket. So look, Donald Trump has always had very strong political feelings. He's always had very heterodox views. By the way, the one view that as far back as that clip, even probably further back to the 1970s, the one thing where Donald Trump was always a traitor to his upper class friends on was China and trade. He was always much, much more hawkish on U.S.-China relations, much more anti-free trade absolutism, much more pro-protectionist, much more pro-U.S. manufacturing. Go back to look at what he was saying in interviews right around the time that he was giving this clip, and he was proved totally right on that. He was proved remarkably prescient on that, I would argue, both economically and politically. But yeah, I saw that clip the other day when it was circulating on social media as well. And it's just, it's remarkable as well how little his voice has changed. I mean, if you close your eyes there, mm-hmm. I mean, he basically sounds the exact same way. He looks just like Eric Trump, as you said there. Look, the guy's been around for a long time. He's been around in the public square for a long time now, Megan.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I enjoy seeing it. You know, I would like to see a, no, I wouldn't. Never mind. I'll move on. I'd like to see a clip of everybody who's running for office when they're super young so I can compare and contrast. But I think Trump's holding it together okay. I want to switch over to Fannie Willis because there's developments in that legal case today. Interestingly, and I don't think this is a positive development, Judge McAfee, the judge who's deciding whether to disqualify Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, just got a challenger. He was running. He'd been appointed to the spot because there was a vacancy. And now he has to run to, you know, you could call it re-election, but really he's technically not been elected. And he was running unopposed up until yesterday. And now a Democrat has decided he's going to run against him, named Robert Petillo, who's a civil rights attorney, criminal defense attorney, talk radio host, former executive director of the Rainbow Push Coalition, which is a social justice and civil rights group founded by the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who seems to really, really, really hate Trump. I'll just give you a couple. Checking his social media, there's one post showing Trump, and his post reads, "This man has brain damage." He's got, oh gosh, a bunch of them. He's celebrating the amount that he owes in that Letitia James civil litigation against his corporation. He is mocking the Trump sneakers, calling them air treasons. Whatever. The point is, there's nothing nice about Donald Trump on here. He can't stand him. And again, this is a jurisdiction that went 72 plus, almost 73% for Joe Biden in the presidential election, Sarah. And there's a real question about whether this is going to up the ante for this judge so much that he's now essentially choosing between keeping his job and doing what's right, which is, if you ask most independent experts and not people who are thumb on the scale for Fannie, to DQ this woman and her lover.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me in this particular Fannie Willis situation is just how arrogant these people on the left have gotten in. I mean, she wasn't careful. She and Nathan Wade weren't careful. It seems to be that everyone in town knew exactly what was going on. But that seems to be par for the course when it comes to the left. I mean, you have, you know, Hillary Clinton like taking a baseball bat to their, you know, computers to hide their tracks. You have, you know, Bill Clinton saying, "I did not have sexual relations with this woman." I mean, they're so arrogant because they know
Menendez,
at the end of the day,
with his alleged corruption.
And he's still there, and the Democrats won't do anything about it. And so, you know, I mean, we're seeing this two-tier justice system, but really at the end of the day, I mean, they are arrogant because they know that they can get away with it. They've been getting away with it for so long. And so, I mean, I'm with you, Megan. I'm very cynical about this particular situation. I don't think that justice will be done in this situation because, I mean, when has it ever been done when you're on the left? Seemingly, you can get away with murder if you have a D after your name and you are a radical activist. And yet, you know, again, I go back to Donald Trump and the people who are, you know, who were at the Capitol on January 6th, particularly my friend, investigative reporter Steve Baker, who is now being charged with misdemeanors and he's being perp walked. And so, I mean, it is really scary.
For words.
We are living in a time, with this two-tier justice system where we seem to just be selectively prosecuting people for their political opinions. Meanwhile, you've got people like Fannie Willis who are over there, I mean, participating in high levels of corruption. You've got, you know, this money laundering situation with her boyfriend. And to think that we will have a judge that will rule based off of politics and not the actual law is really scary.
I hope I'm wrong. I think our viewers agree with you, Sarah, because I read enough of the comments to know that they do not believe this judge is going to have the fortitude to disqualify Fannie Willis, which would be a big move, but totally justified here. It's literally, I think, the only possible just result, given what we've seen. But Josh, this does add a complication because it is a Democratic district. It's a heavily Democratic district. And it really is, in a way, asking him potentially to choose between keeping his job as a judge and doing what's right. And I don't mean to suggest he's going to be self-serving, but like, he's human. And it's just it's a big complication. And that's why they did it. This guy claims, oh, it's not about this judge and trying to pressure him and Fannie Willis. But he went on and on about how he's hated the trial and he thinks it's been like a show trial and not well handled. And a real judge would have shut this thing down long ago. So it's definitely a Democratic move to pressure Judge McAfee.
Yeah, look, Fulton County, Georgia is where Atlanta is, out of the bluest area of the state of Georgia. I mean, that's why they're bringing this case there in the first place. I mean, Fannie Willis is obviously a left-wing nut job herself. Look, Megan, I thought that Judge McAfee has been fairly fair over the course of these hearings thus far. You know, in fact, when Fannie got up there as a witness herself and she sounded, frankly, just like a moron. I mean, like asking what continent the country of Belize is in. I mean, she just did not come across well. I really don't know how else to say it. I thought that what Judge McAfee was doing, his strategy was to basically give her the rope with which to hang herself. And she very much did that. And after that, I was like, wow, like he's actually being very fair here. And maybe he is going to reach the obvious conclusion, especially after we saw that most recent data point that the Trump's lawyers hired that geolocation cell phone investigator guy that showed that they were communicating thousands and thousands of times. He was leaving her apartment at 3:30 a.m. It's all looking really, really, really bad. This obviously is a complication. And I guess one other comment on that, you know, it's worth pointing out, America has 50 states. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to how state judges become judges in the state. So there are judicial elections in some states. There are judicial retention elections in some states where you vote just to keep or to let a judge go, but you don't vote for an actual successor. Then you have advice and consent. You have the so-called Missouri plan. There's a lot of different ways out there to get state judges. It's one thing that the states are very divided on. As a lawyer, I know you are as well, Megan. I have a lot of friends who are on different sides of this particular issue. I've actually been more in favor of partisan judicial elections than most of my lawyer friends historically, but this clearly is one of the potential downsides to it if the judge's decision-making is swayed by this primary challenge.
Mm-hmm. I know. And, you know, look, there's always the potential for a federal judgeship for this guy. Governor Kemp is the one who put him in the spot to begin with, and I'm sure that could be attempted. We'll see, given the way, you know, the Senate is right now. But I hope he does the right thing. And I hope he doesn't make it about himself and his longevity in Fulton County, because let's face it, that's probably limited anyway. As a Republican Federalist judge in Fulton County, how long could he last anyway? Anyway, good luck to him. And I guess good luck to his challenger in keeping it a fair race. Guys, thank you both so much. Josh and Sarah, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, up next, we're going to be joined by author Gareth Russell, and we're going to get into a lot of things happening across the pond. But my first question is going to be, what the heck is going on with Kate Middleton? All right, what's happening? Because William just had to cancel yet another engagement for personal reasons. The engagement was like two steps away from where he lives. Nobody knows what's actually happening with Princess Kate. Does Gareth? We'll find out.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are, no car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
In our first hour, we discussed the train wreck that was the State of the Union address. Now it's time to go across the pond to the royal mystery that has everyone asking, where is Kate Middleton? And what did she have done in the hospital? It's been nearly 2 months since the Princess of Wales had, quote, abdominal surgery. That's all they'll say. And with every passing day, the conspiracy theories about what happened to her grow, thanks in large part to the royal family's own, I think, mismanagement of the messaging. You got to say something. It's not 1800. We need to know something. And we have the perfect guest to discuss this and many other things related to the royals. Historian and author of the book, The Palace, From the Tudors to the Windsors, 500 Years of British History at Hampton Court. Gareth Russell, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Megan.
Oh, the pleasure's all ours. I loved listening to you on my husband Doug's podcast, Dedicated with Doug Brunt. You guys covered such fun ground, including your relationship with Charles C.W. Cook, which I'm going to have to ask you about as well. But let's start here. Let's start here. What is going on with Kate Middleton? She went in the hospital for 13 days. She got out. She's just now been seen for the first time in a car being driven by her mother. But they're not telling us anything. And as I mentioned to the audience before we went to break, now her husband, Prince William, February 27th, canceled a public appearance at a memorial service for his godfather. And that's notwithstanding the fact that he could literally have walked right across to that venue had he chosen to, but he had to cancel for a, quote, personal matter. This has everyone wondering what this is. They say it's not cancer related. That's all they'll tell us. What do you know about
it? Yeah, so that's a very good point about the memorial service for his godfather. And it was a very prestigious event. So his godfather was the last king of Greece. And really, most of the European royal families sent representatives to London for the memorial service. The Greek royal family settled in Britain after the revolution. So it was surprising that he wasn't there. And I think you're right. I think, well, it's the million pound question, isn't it? What's wrong? It's interesting you mentioned that they ruled out cancer. That does seem to be within the royal household, as it is, I suppose, for many families. The big C is the big thing. And they will be fairly candid about life-threatening or terminal conditions. And we've seen with the king talking about his cancer. There are a lot of rumors about what's wrong with the Princess of Wales, Meghan. They range from the credible to the outright deranged. And I think you're probably right that the royal household could have done more. As you say, if you give nothing, someone else will supply that information and they won't have the basis or good faith that you do. I think Kensington Palace's perspective, though, is to defend them a bit. They said, look, you'll be told after Easter. It's not Easter yet. You'll get the information when she's ready. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because obviously everyone has the right to privacy when they're recuperating. But at the same time, she is a very, very public figure. So the palace are sort of caught in their own plan, if you like. They don't really know how to get out of this without looking like they're backing down to social media pressure.
I mean, abdominal surgery could be any number of things, but I can't think of one. And I even asked my own doctor at my annual physical, what could keep you in the hospital for 2 weeks, especially as a young, vibrant woman? She's only, I think, 42. And he was stumped. We weren't coming up with anything. I said, a hysterectomy? He said, even that, you would have been out shorter. Online, they've speculated maybe an ovarian cyst. That can be done laparoscopically. My son, people know this, a couple of years ago, got injured on a ski mountain and tore his spleen in 3 places. He had to be in the ICU for 7 days, not moving. 7 days, that not 2 weeks. And that was a very serious, potentially life-threatening injury. Anyway, that's part of the mystery. What on earth could keep a vibrant, otherwise healthy person in the hospital for it wound up being 13 days?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the hysterectomy because that was kind of the presumed reason for a long time in the British press, although they did hold back a bit on speculation, but certainly that was the front runner, if you like, for the public reasons. if I was to give the royal household any advice, and fairly obviously they have no need to listen to me, but if I was to give them, or if I was doing this myself, I think what they would need to do, Meghan, is when the princess is back to public duty, some kind of interview or fuller statement will be needed. Otherwise, even when she's back in public life, a lot of these conspiracy theories will not die down. They'll keep running. Conspiracy theories are sort of like cockroaches after a nuclear bomb, aren't they? They can survive anything.
I'll tell you one that we're going to know whether it's true pretty soon, one way or the other. And that's this craziness from Esther Krakow, a writer and broadcaster on Sky News. Listen to what she thinks happened in 26, not 26.
I mean, some of the conspiracy theories, I have to admit, they did make me laugh. There's a meme going around on the internet assuming that, saying that Princess Catherine underwent a BBL surgery. So she may very well be the first Kardashian of the royal family if Meghan Markle doesn't beat her to it.
Okay. With respect to Esther, she was just repeating what she saw.
She was.
One of the BBL, for those not familiar, is the Brazilian butt lift. It's what Kim Kardashian obviously had, though she denies it, where you just make your butt enormous. Now, I do think, Gareth, we're going to know that one before there's any admission after Easter.
Look, Meghan, I think if it's HRH BBL, we will know. It'll be pretty obvious when it comes time for state banquets and they have to get an extra wide chair for the Princess of Wales. Yeah, I think Esther was right probably to have a bit of fun with that one. But it's one among many, although I have to say, in terms of the laughter rating, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, I mean, the royal family seems to be in a bit of a health crisis at the moment between Kate being in the hospital for 2 weeks and the king, 18 months into his reign, getting diagnosed again with some form of mystery cancer, right? That's another one where we haven't been given all the facts. I mean, when you're talking about the big C, they really should just be transparent on it. This is like what's happening with our defense secretary over here. Like, everything's a parlor game. I realize it's private, but these are public figures in very prominent roles. And their life in Great Britain is basically funded by the taxpayer. So it's a tough balance there. How do we think the king is doing?
The king, it was pretty remarkable for him to come out and say that he was undergoing treatment for the enlarged prostate, partly because there is still an element to which the royals are quite private. I mean, we never talked about his mother's health in that degree.
Right.
And a few years ago, I worked on a biography of his grandmother. And when I was doing the section on her life in the 1960s, I still couldn't get a definite answer on whether she had cancer then. You know, there was that element of privacy. What's really interesting, Meghan, is that when he talked about going for the prostate treatment, which he was very open about, I think there was something like a 1,450% increase in British men accessing prostate cancer services and charities. So the potential for them to do an enormous amount of public good when they are open about it is extraordinary and very palpable. Some people have supported him not then specifying what cancer was discovered in the prostate treatment because it encouraged people to keep looking, you know, for all kinds of cancers. But other people, like you said, have lent more towards the perspective of you were specific about one thing and then not the other. Isn't there maybe a benefit to consistency and being a bit more open generally across the board as you were about the prostate?
They should just do what our president does, which is just don't get tested. Anything that you think is bothering you, just don't have it tested and put a doctor out there saying everything's fine. Don't believe your lying eyes.
That, to be honest, that's probably how I cope with my own health. I just pretend everything's fine.
until the man upstairs wants to send you a different message.
Right. Until it's time to go. Yeah.
Let's just take a little sojourn over onto your mention of the Queen Mum, because I do think this is fascinating. So your book was about not Queen Elizabeth, but her mother. And for listeners at home, this is the Helena Bonham Carter character in The King's Speech, right? This is the woman, like, we knew the Queen Mother. If you're old enough, you remember the Queen Mum. She lived to be, what, 104? Something ripe old age.
Yeah, 101. She got into her centenary very comfortably.
Okay. And so, you know, most of us who didn't know much about her did fall in love with that character in The King's Speech because she was so loyal to her husband, who is the father of Queen Elizabeth and now the grandfather of the current king, King Charles. So I loved some of your stories to Doug. You were saying that you unearthed all sorts of fun anecdotes about her. She had a great somewhat bawdy sense of humor. It sounds like she didn't take herself that seriously for a queen.
No, and I have to give Doug full points. You know, when he makes the guests a drink, he made the Queen Mother's favorite tipple, a gin and dubonny. And I tried to say, look, I don't know if this is an on-air kind of drink. It's closer to paint stripper, Doug, but we'll give it a go. So the Queen Mother was just, I loved writing about her, Meghan. I have a real soft spot for kind of tough women. They used to call her the steel dagger in a silk glove because she was very charming, but you didn't mess with her. And she had this fantastic sense of humor. So she had two gay servants and quite a few gay servants, actually, because homosexuality was legal for a large part of her life in the UK. And in her house, it was sort of a safer environment for them. But two of the footmen ended up dating each other, but also quarreling. And one afternoon, they forgot to bring her drink because they were arguing. And she didn't realize other people, including a bishop, were in the house at the time, and she intercommed and said, when you two old queens have finished fighting, could you fetch this old queen her drink? And that sort of was the story that I heard over and over again, because I think the bishop was trying not to laugh too hard. But yeah, she didn't take herself too seriously. One person who did take her seriously, and I think this is a compliment of all compliments, during the Second World War, Hitler called her the most dangerous woman in Europe because she was so tough and gave such a lift to British morale during the Blitz, because unlike a lot of other governments, the king and queen refused to evacuate London even during the air raids. Buckingham Palace was hit twice. And she actually became a really skilled marksman. And she told Winston Churchill that she thought if the Nazis invaded, that she knew they would probably kill her and her family. So she was determined to charge at them with a gun and try to take as many of the Nazis with her before she was gunned down. So I had a huge amount of time for her. That's my kind of girl.
So this is kind of what I have been saying lately. I was mocking earlier this week the fact that these young girls on TikTok over here are trying to make a hero out of Monica Lewinsky. I'm sorry, you know, but no. And I see today here, you know, Katie Britt gives the response to the State of the Union for Republicans and sounds absurd with this overacting and this overly dramatic performance. And it's just so frustrating to me because I know and I see all the time extremely strong female role models who are, forgive me, Gareth, just ball busters, right? And they're out there. I don't know why they don't get fronted or celebrated more, in particular by our friends on the left over here in the States. But I mean, you've lived it. And for some reason, England is much better at recognizing it, elevating it, and celebrating it.
It's a really good point. I wonder, it might be the historical past that we have. You know, we have ball-busting queens stretching back 1,000 years. So maybe there's a culture of us, you know, we like spine in our public figures, certainly in the past. And I think one of the things that the Queen Mother really passed on to her daughter, the late Queen Elizabeth, is that sometimes you don't need to be really showy about your charisma or about your public service or even about your personality. There's a real, I said this to Doug actually, Meghan, and it's we talked about this, it stuck with me. I think there's such a great virtue in just putting one foot in front of the other, turning up, you know, doing your duty and keeping going. And that's kind of why I gravitated towards people like the Queen Mother, who took their country and their role seriously, but didn't take themselves too seriously. I think that's a great balance.
Mm-hmm. Here's a little bit, if you guys haven't seen the King's Speech back from 2010, you need to. It's so good. We cut a clip. I think this is Colin Firth as the King, but let's watch.
With war looming, you've saddled this nation with a voiceless king. You've destroyed the happiness of my family, all for the sake of ensnaring a star patient you couldn't possibly hope to assist. It'll be like mad King George III. It'll be mad King George the Stammerer, who let his people down so badly in their hour of need. What are you doing? Get up! You can't sit there! Get up!
Why not? It's a chair.
No, that is not a chair. That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names on it.
Chair
is the seat on which every king and queen...
by a large rock.
That is the stone of Scone. You are trivializing everything. You trivialize...
I don't care how many royal assholes have sat.
Listen to me! Listen to me!
Listen to you by what right?
By divine right, if you must. I am your king.
No, you're not. You told me so yourself. You said you didn't want it. Why should I waste my time listening
because
to you?
I have a right to be, and I have a voice!
Yes, you do.
Oh, so brilliant. Jeffrey Rush was amazing. Colin Firth, too. And that, I mean, this, the whole movie was based on an actual fact, which was the king has, mm-hmm. as he points out, a stammer, and his wife, the queen mother, who we've been discussing, was very supportive of him in trying to get through it.
Yeah, and actually, I love this story. One of the things I found out when I was researching my book on her was that the writer, I think David Siedler is his name, contacted her in 1981, 1982, and asked her questions about her husband's speech impediment, about the therapy, and she answered them. She wrote him back sort of pages upon pages of answers. And then she said at the end, "This was very painful. It was a really difficult time in my life. Would you mind waiting until I'm dead before you make the movie of this? But don't worry, I'm 83. You won't have to wait too long." And then she lived to 101. But he did hold off. He kept his promise and didn't make it until she died.
All right. I mean, I would be remiss if I did not point out, because he mentioned King George, the Mad King. And that is the one from whom we rebelled when America was formed in a more perfect union. And I don't know if you're familiar. I know that you're, you know, very culturally astute. But here in Connecticut, the cultural event of the season happened the other night when my son's fourth grade class put on the American Revolution, and it was a triumph. It was incandescent, Gareth. And I told the audience this was coming, but our son Thatcher got cast as Betsy Ross. It's an all-boys school, so some of the boys played girls. And we just cut just a bit of, we blurred the children's faces because I, you know, everybody's privacy, but here's just a little bit of how that looked.
By the legislatures of each state, and George Washington was unanimously elected president by the Electoral College.
Electoral College? How does that work?
No one knows, dear. It's a complete mystery.
Please, Betsy. It's just a bit complicated.
Okay, well, why don't we let these fellows here explain? They're on their way to participate in the very first Electoral College.
And scene. So that was my little Betsy talking about the Electoral College.
That's the period drama we all should be seeing the movie rights for. That's what I want to see, Megan.
Let me tell you something. Thatcher Brunt could teach Katie Britt a thing or two about not being overly dramatic. Hold it back. Reel it
listen,
in.
Listen, if Thatcher doesn't end up playing Betsy Ross in the movie version of the American Revolution, I'm not buying a ticket. That's just the way it's going to have to be.
Listen, I would take the Queen Mother any day over Kamala Harris, who stands and applauds for herself. The Queen would be rolling over in her grave if she ever saw one of her offspring being so self-congratulatory. It's not a thing. And also the stiff upper lip. We missed that. Somehow, in our separation from Great Britain, we lost that entirely. Now we just lean into our weaknesses, our complaints, and our lack of being able to handle our emotions at every turn.
It's funny because she did have some insecurities, but she said that the best she ever felt about herself, this is the Queen Mum, was when she went to New York, I think in the 1950s, and some of the wonderful New York taxi drivers just rolled down their windows and shouted, "You look great. I don't like thin women. You look brilliant." And she said, "Well, I'm a bit fat, but the New York taxi drivers love me."
Those guys are the best. Well,
yeah, they are.
I mean, apparently, you know, how many decades later, they felt very differently about Meghan Markle because they chased her to within an inch of her life in her fake paparazzi car chase that she said was nearly catastrophic, which is an impossibility on the streets of New York. What do you make of her?
It's really interesting because the figures, so she's not the least popular member of the royal family. That's Prince Andrew for, you know, fairly obvious reasons. I know, I think this is... I'll put my money on the table, Meghan. I have a feeling the Sussexes, or particularly Prince Harry, would like to be back involved in royal life. That the numbers here, though, do not suggest the public would be wildly enthusiastic about that. Before Spare came out, about one in three people said they would like to see Prince Harry back in public life. That's now more like one in seven. So the numbers have taken quite the tumble. So, but you know what? Everyone loves a comeback story. So, well, not everyone, but we'll see. We'll see.
I'm gonna take the what is it? The no pass line on that one. tying it all together. Kate Middleton has an uncle named Gary Goldsmith. I did not know this, and he has been starring, for lack of a better term, in Celebrity Big Brother UK. And he weighed in on, among other things, Meghan and Harry by saying the following in SOT 29.
They were a threesome. So Kate, William and Harry, they look really comfortable together, loved, and then suddenly there's an extra dynamic that comes in, puts a stick in the spokes and creates so much drama that I don't genuinely think was there, and rewrote the history and said how unhappy he was. And I just don't think that's fair. And then you can't throw your family under a bus in such a dramatic style, then write books about it and expect it to be invited around for Christmas.
Right on, Gary. Who knew that there was a loquacious uncle to Kate Middleton out there doing celebrity TV and giving interviews? Who is this guy?
Well, Meghan, firstly, can I also tell you, if you want to really just laugh yourself into the evening, watch some of Sharon Osbourne's comments in that show. They're like heat-seeking missiles. Oh, Meghan, I the tiny tears of laughter, to be honest. They were brilliant. Anyway, I'm sure there's a bit of Kate thinking, oh my God, why is he on Celebrity Big Brother? This is the last thing on God's holy green earth I needed. But at the same time, the public seemed to be really enjoying his performance. And I think people thought he was going to come in and be a disaster. And so far, not.
He's keeping her secret. He was asked about Kate and he said, I'm not saying anything. I doubt Gary knows, let's be honest. But he did say, I'm not going to say anything. Right. Here's right, what are the odds?
I think it's really easy to keep what you don't have. Yeah.
Right. We need a little bit of the Gary Goldsmith promo from this show so our audience can get to know him better. Watch.
I'm Gary Goldsmith, the uncle to the future queen of our country, Catherine Middleton, the current Princess of Wales. She is simply perfect. First time I met William, Catherine was cooking, and William said, hi, do you want a cup of tea? Very normal. I often read that people think I'm a bit of a bad boy. It'd be lovely to put the record straight, but winding people up is probably my favourite hobby. Every part of me is just riddled with mischief and danger. Now I'm an absolute nightmare to live with. There's a reason why I've had four wives.
So he's like, he's going to be, I don't know, what's he going to be? He's going to be the uncle-in-law to the king one day.
Yeah. Meghan, can you imagine if you were related, particularly if you're the Princess of Wales, and you see a moment where your uncle goes on national television and says, I love annoying people and I'm full of mischief. That has to be the point where you just take the ice out of the ice pack on your forehead and dump it into your drink. Like, there's just that.
Well, at least they haven't disowned him like Meghan and Harry did to Meghan's father.
Yeah, it's not a Thomas Markle. There's not a Thomas Markle situation. But you know what? Let's just see how Celebrity Big Brother plays out. I think so far, I have to say the British public seem to be loving it. They are thoroughly entertained.
Okay. Well, I want to move on because I want to talk about your latest book that you discussed with Doug, The Palace, because it actually does have some good intrigue in there about figures that, you know, people may actually remember and know. For example, I wanted to get into, hold on a second. I'm looking for my notes because there was a good one. It was Elizabeth. Elizabeth nearly died of smallpox in 1562. I mean, the Queen Elizabeth, not the most recently departed Queen Elizabeth. And it did occur to me, I guess there's a long history of the royals being very, very secretive about their health issues. Mm.
Totally. So, I mean, to go back to your earlier point, Meghan, that sort of queen of the ball-busting queens, Elizabeth I, I mean, she ruled for 45 years from 1558 to 1603. One of her nicknames was Gloriana. She's sort of considered one of the great English monarchs. And yet only 4 years into her reign, she was at Hampton Court Palace, which is just this gorgeous historic palace outside London. And she caught smallpox, and there are these 15 extraordinary days there where she very nearly dies. And she's unmarried, she's childless, nobody knows who to pick as the next monarch. And firstly, you think, what would history be like if she died after only 4 years as queen rather than 45? But the other thing, to go to your point about the secrecy, is had she died, or monarchs died unexpectedly, there was a chance of civil war, there was a chance of rebellion, riots. So secrecy sort of becomes baked into the royal DNA from this ancient precedent. And each chapter in the palace is sort of a different room, different person, different decade, moving from royalty to servants. And that chapter I love doing, because I kind of do love the mystery of what if it had all gone so wrong and she hadn't turned the corner that autumn at Hampton Court.
Well, it's amazing that they lived through any physical challenge back then, given the bizarre remedies they were unleashing on one another in the day. You know, there's a great line in one of the Woody Allen movies where they talk about, you know, what would you miss if you did time travel back to the 1920s and you were there, in Paris, France, when all the greats were writing? And he said, antibiotics, and it's true. Like, man had a point.
Yeah, penicillin or even like a good paracetamol if you're having like really minor things that they struggled with. And one of the things I discovered writing that chapter was that she had a German doctor and he had an Arabic remedy. So they wrapped her like a funeral shroud, head to toe, in red flannel, and then put her next to a massive fireplace and cooked her. Like, they sweated the disease out of her, which sounds just like 1% less comfortable than dying, to be totally honest. But that's kind of how they got the fever out of her.
Right. I mean, you see it depicted in all the movies with like the leeches sucking the blood, and then they actually cut people so they could bleed out. People are one step away from doing that after having received the COVID vaccine these days. They're like, you hear all these stories about people going down to Mexico and getting their blood replaced. It's like, okay, I'm not sure that's going to solve anything. But in any event, what bizarre remedies are we doing to ourselves right now that we're going to look back on and laugh or cringe at? All right, I've got to ask you about Charles Cook, because we love Charlie. We're huge fans of Charlie. Everyone on the team loves Charlie, except for my assistant, Abigail Finan, because she's the same age as Charlie, and she's horrified at what he has achieved and the big brain he has. And she does not feel she has, even though she's an amazing person, he makes her feel like she hasn't quite done enough with her 37 years. So what was it like going to college with Charlie?
I think I was Abigail, to be totally honest. Imagine being next to Charles, who had this sort of very, neither Charles nor I were chained to the library. When we were talking about our favorite memories, it was a pub called the King's Arms, which tells you pretty much everything you need to know. And yet Charles just had this unbelievable grasp, particularly of American history. He did his thesis on the Second Amendment. And he was just even then so incredibly impressive. So yeah, Abigail, I fully and completely empathize. He's just relentlessly impressive.
Were you surprised when he decided to pursue and attain American citizenship?
No, I was surprised he didn't do it earlier. He just absolutely loves the United States, and his knowledge of the Constitution and the American Revolution is genuinely extraordinary. This, by the way, is the nicest I've ever been about him, Megan.
Move on from that. Let's hear the bad Charlie Cook stories. Come on, give me something to use against him.
He won't mind this, but I hope not. Otherwise, I'll never hear from him again. But hey ho, they lifted the ban in the Oxford Library on bringing drinks in if you were revising for your final exams, and they clearly meant water. And he opened a bottle of red wine and decanted it into a glass. And I just remember the librarian, like a torpedo, get out. And he had to leave the library with his nice Malbec, I think. So that is one of my, overall from college, my favorite memories, Charles decanting a nice red in the middle of the history faculty.
This
library.
Way he did it, but he did it in a classy way. I mean, he's still talking about going down to the pub and getting his sort of view of American life through the local pub. We do that here as well as across the pond. I mean, one thing that's interesting to me is you're Irish, right?
Yeah. So I'm a Belfast boy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me is, Charles is from the UK, you too. And I feel like you guys are almost canaries in the coal mine when it comes to what's happening in our country with the wokeness and the crazy race essentialism and the crazy stuff on the trans. Like, whenever I want to feel better about what's happening in America, I look over at the UK. I say, and Ireland in particular has been terrible, which I don't get. I realize there's Protestants and so on, but there's a lot of Catholics over in Ireland. We tend to be a little bit more socially conservative. So what's happening?
Yeah. That's a great question, actually. So I'm not Catholic. So any Irish Catholic that feels that I'm speaking out of turn, I'm sure they will let me know.
I can speak this for all of us. You're good.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Megan. So I think part of what happened with Irish Catholics quite seriously is that a lot of the social conservatism and sort of was generally rocked by the scandals in the church, say the last 20, 30 years. And there sort of has been really, I was going to say a come to Jesus moment, but that's unintentionally ironic, given what's happened. Yeah, I think that's a really big part of it, Megan. And I think probably in, say, like 20, 30 years, there'll be a historian who can say, what did the kind of the fallout from the abuse scandals in the Catholic Church do to social conservatism across the Southern Ireland? Because one of my best friend's mothers, it was such an interesting conversation. She said that it was like a death to her. You know, she used to go to mass every Sunday, and then it became difficult and painful. And you were trying to remember, had you seen things, you know, that weren't right. So that, I think, is a really, really big part of that kind of shattering. But it's also, I mean, look, it's also modernity, things shift. But I think those abuse scandals did as yet not fully appreciated damage. I think it was hugely impactful.
That is a very interesting, astute point. Someone should take a hard look at that. What role did that play in the deterioration that we're seeing and feeling on a society-wide basis? For sure, the absence of religion and the shoving of religion out of the public square and out of public life and private life has been extremely detrimental. But that's a very interesting theory on what's happened in the Catholic Church and why more Catholics aren't standing up to this craziness. Gareth Russell, you're amazing. You're so interesting. You've done so much. Thank you. And please come back.
Oh, anytime, Megan. Thanks so much. I had a great time.
Likewise. All right. So the latest book is called The Palace. You guys need to check it out. Very interesting and fun to read. So I think you'll enjoy him in the written word as much as you did in the spoken. All the best to you. Okay. Now we want to tell our audience the Oscars are Sunday and they're being hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. And I just want to tell you right now, I'm going to have a special treat for Jimmy Kimmel on Monday. So I hope you make a programming note to make sure you download the show on Monday, or just follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/MeganKelly. We're going to break down what happens on those shows, which I'm sure will be ridiculous, with Andrew Klavan and Maureen Callahan. That's a good combo. And in the meantime, if you guys would like to check out some of our highlights from the week or the special gift my Strudwick left for me on Wednesday morning, in my family room, you should go sign up at go to MeganKelly.com. Sign up for my once a week email. I don't bombard you. MeganKelly.com. You can email me there too. You can see all the shows and our fun clips and your latest on my little sweet red menace, Strudwick Brunt. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.